Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about Witchblade Volume 1. This is the series that came out in 2018, and it's a sort of a reimagining. It's a new Witchblade bearer. It's not Sarah Pazzini, as you know, most people think of when they think of the Witchblade. And I feel like this version of Witchblade, it kind of flew under the radar. I don't think it got really the credit it deserved for being a really good story. So I just wanted to cover the first volume here, which is the first six issues of the regular series. Obviously, you can get the trade paperback as well. It's definitely worth your time. So it's written by Caitlin Kittredge. We have art by Roberta Ingranata, colors by Brian Valenza, and letters are by Troy Petrie. So in the first issue, we meet the new bearer of the Witchblade, and she has the Witchblade when we meet her. And the other cool thing that that is done here that Troy Petrie does is whenever the Witchblade is speaking to Alex, it's in red. It's a different font. It's very clear. So you always know when it is that the Witchblade is speaking. And that's the first words we get in the story. It says, "Death is not the end. Death is a doorway. And on the other side, ... So we do see the new bearer of the Witchblade, Alex, and she's laying there and she's looking up at the sky and she's covered in blood. And, you know, you kind of wonder, okay, where is she? And she's like, "Help me, help me." And a shadowy figure comes and starts to reach out for her. And her eyes blaze blue and this kind of magic tentacles sort of come out, and she hears the word rebirth spoken to her. So clearly the Witchblade manifesting its power. So then she wakes up. She says, "Oh, it's the same dream every night for a week." And she apparently is familiar with these types of dreams. She's had them in the past. She lives in Brooklyn, New York. We're flashing back to 24 hours earlier. She takes some kind of medication. She's talking about how she's had bad dreams before, but not for a long time. She thought it was over, but it's never over for her. So it's clear that she's been through some stuff. And we follow her to her job. She works at the Witness Aid Service Unit in the office of the District Attorney for Lower Manhattan. And she's recognized by I guess you'd say a client or a victim, somebody she's there to help. And she's referred to as Alex Underwood. She was on the news and she talks about, yeah, she doesn't really do that anymore. What she does is she helps witnesses and victims of crimes. And she's there with her boss, who's an assistant DA, Maddox. And they're talking to this woman, Myra, who's filed a police report because her husband, a detective, Blake Groves, for the NYPD, basically beats the crap out of her. And being that he's a cop, you know, nobody will listen to her. And she's tired of being beaten. She's tired of lying to ER doctors about how her teeth got knocked out and, you know, how she fell on the subway. You know, she's told that story to 10 different ER doctors. And she pulls a picture out of her purse, actually, of her and her husband, this framed picture. And she says, "You know, you should have this. You know, keep it with all the photos of me that were taken at the hospital when I was beatings, because somebody should know how much of a liar he is. Like, no matter if he's the charming guy in a photo when we're smiling and on vacation and what have you, whatever tropical setting, or whether he's the guy that, you know, did damage to me where I look like I got the crap beat out of me in those photos. He's a liar no matter what. He's a monster in both those pictures." So Alex asks her, she's going back to the hotel. Myra says no, going home, because even Blake isn't foolish enough to violate a restraining order in broad daylight. And she leaves. And assistant DA Maddox and Alex are talking, and they're like, "Man, I'm just not really sure. You know, Blake, he might be willing to take the chance." So Alex says, "I'll make sure she gets to her car." And Maddox is like, no. You want to help, do better than my useless investigator and find the maid that supposedly was a witness to Blake beating on his wife. You know, I really want Detective Graves to walk into his trial wearing a big fat anklet monitor. And we see on Alex's desk those pictures I was talking about where, Myra's just bruised and bloody and beaten, split lip and stitches over her eye. So then the scene shifts back to Alex's apartment. We're hearing from the Witchblade again, and it's in the current time, and the Witchblade's telling Alex to wake up. She's been shot. She wants to understand what's going on, and the Witchblade says, you don't remember Alex being born or living. You don't remember being afraid. You don't remember feeling alive. You don't remember your purpose because you died, Alex, and you were born again, and this is your future. And as the Witchblade is saying this, we're seeing snapshots of Alex being born and celebrating birthdays and making friends and going to college and having her first kiss. And we actually see her in Afghanistan when she was still a reporter. And so, again, we know that she's been through some stuff. And we actually see her leaving what looks to be an office building with a box packed up. And then next we see her, she's in court. So it's sort of hinted at that she's left this career where she was on TV and she was a reporter and she was, you know, a little more famous, a little more celebrity. And she gave that up to fight for these victims, but died somehow. And she's been reborn through the power of the Witchblade. So she's also given a vision that shows her and Myra dead with a shadowy male figure standing in the background. And the Witchblade says, this is your future unless you save Myra. And that is the only way to save yourself. So she wakes up and she's saying, focus, you're awake. It's just a dream. So again, she's been through some stuff and it's clear that these dreams have plagued her for a while. She's washing her face and she sees a reflection in the mirror where her eyes are bleeding and they're black. There's no pupil or iris. They're just black. And it startles her and she's kind of, you know, crouched down and holding herself and trying to gain control and saying, not again, please God, not again. She's trying to just hold it together. You know, clearly she's been through some trauma and she's worried that this is some sort of PTSD. And she calls out, is there somebody out there? Is there somebody in my apartment? And the Witchblade is talking to her again, saying, you're not made to hide, Alex. Not anymore. Stand. And she walks out there. She sees a vision of Myra, who's been shot in the head. And she's still talking, though, saying, save me. You have the time. You can stop him. You can stop all of them. You have to choose to, though. And so she picks up her phone, saying, who's ever out there? I'm calling 911. But she drops it before she can. And the Witchblade's talking to her again, just from saying, hey, you got to save yourself. You got to save yourself. And she, you know, she thinks that she's going crazy. She thinks she's going insane. Tells the voice to shut up. And again, the Witchblade's talking to her. It's not that way. It's coming for you. You're not strong enough. You need to run. And before she can do anything, somebody leaps through the window of her apartment and grabs her from behind. And this guy jumps on her back saying, so new, so young, so warm, so alive. And she manages to grab a shard of glass that fell from the broken window and cut the guy on the cheek. But instead of blood coming out, it's like this smoky black substance. And she's like, oh man, she has no idea what's going on. And the Witchblade is telling her, run, survive. That's all that matters. So she jumps out the window, goes down the fire escape. She's running away down the alley when another figure grabs her, another man. He says, don't struggle. I'm here to help you. And she turns around and kind of hits him a couple times, pulls out her mace. Don't come any closer. He's telling her, you need to calm down. You're scared. That's normal. But would it help to hear that you're not crazy? I know you're hearing voices and that thing that attacked you in your apartment. It's all real. It's not fake. She's like, no, it's all happened to me before. It just means I'm seeing things. I need to go back to my psychiatrist every week instead of every other week. And this guy's telling her, no. You woke up. You have no memory of the last 24 hours. You're hearing a voice in your head that's not your own. You have these terrible visions. Now, tell me any of that's wrong and I'll leave. And she's, again, her eyes kind of blacken over and she says no and collapses in this guy's arms. So as I said before, Alex has been through some stuff and so it makes it unique the way she deals with the Witchblade. She hears these voices. She doubts herself. There's a level of disbelief there that's built in because she has, you know, had a mental breakdown before of some sort, it seems. So anyway, this girl is the vision that she sees is Megan, somebody she hasn't seen since the eighth grade. And she said, well, you died, Megan. It's like, well, yeah, I did, but you're not really here. You passed out. And this is your mind's attempt to sort of make sense of all the trauma of the last few hours. So it's not so much a vision as just you picking a familiar memory to try to cope with what's going on. And, you know, just like your psychiatrist has always said, and Alex is like, I don't understand. I take my meds religiously. I go to my therapy. I've been doing so well. And Meg says, well, I hate to tell you, but this isn't your old trauma coming back. This isn't PTSD. There's something happening, and you know we're not crazy. And Alex is like, well, then what is happening to me? She said, well, the voice told you, you died. You died, and it brought you back. So stop fighting it and wake up. And when she does wake up, she's in this strange apartment. It belongs to the guy that she ran into in the alley, who offers her some tea. And she's like, I don't really know what's happening, but you need to stay away from me. And again, he tries to calm her down, saying, look, I get that you're confused and this is new to you. And it's understandable. She's like, I'm not confused. I'm pissed. Like, I get attacked and then I wake up and some random creep is holding me hostage. Like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, look, nobody's holding you hostage. I brought you here because it's a safe place, but you know, you can leave anytime you want, but the fact is the artifact hasn't fully merged with you yet. So you're very vulnerable right now. And she's like, look, dude, I don't know what your deal is and I don't care. I got to get home. It's like, you can't go back there. There was already a scavenger there that tried to kill you. Next time it's going to be worse. You have to stop fighting this thing and embrace it because the artifact will kill a host who rejects it. And she's like, you realize you sound just like all the crazy schizophrenics I met in the psych ward, right? So again, hints that she's been through some stuff. And the guy says, well, you don't have to believe what I tell you, but you did nearly die and you woke up and you had that bracelet on and now you have a voice in your head. You're missing time. Like, you got to start putting the pieces together. And Alex is like, just because you know those things, just because you're right, it doesn't mean you're not crazy. And he says, okay, well, what's the last thing you remember? So she thinks back. She's like, okay, well, yesterday the husband of one of my clients was watching me and waiting for me. And so I went to Queens to interview the housekeeper that we thought was a witness. And I thought I lost him on the subway, but I guess I was wrong because as I was trying to locate the housekeeper, I got shot. And we see this depicted by Roberta and Granada's incredible artwork. And yeah, so she got shot. She died, basically. And she's like, oh, so I was on the rooftop. And then and this guy tells her, yeah, you died. And something came back, something new. And so Alex is like, oh, man, what is this, hell? Like, what's going on? And the guy tells her, no, it's the opposite of hell. And he you know, lifts her up and he shows her the bracelet. He says, it's a gift. This is the artifact and the power comes from it. At the moment of the host's death, it gives life, but there's a price. And that's why you're seeing things and hearing things. And Alex is like, look, you know, I might not be able to explain any of this, but I'm not going to try, but I can't stay here. I need to be in court. And again, the guy's trying to persuade her. Look, you can't leave. Give it a couple days because you're so vulnerable right now with the artifact trying to bond with you. And Alex says, I don't have a couple days. Myra needs me. So she leaves. She's in Brooklyn somewhere, and she's kind of talking to herself, saying, you know, gift my ass. And she's trying to take the bracelet off, and it's talking to her, saying, no, we're not separate. We're one. If you separate from me, you'll die all over again. And she's seen these visions of past bearers of the Witchblade as it explains to her, I need a host to survive. And in return, I give you the gift of sight and visions, past and future. You know, I make your body strong and I'm a weapon against the darkness. You're my vessel. And so Alex kind of gives up trying to take it off. She calls her boss, ADA Maddox. Debbie is her name. And Debbie's like, where have you been? And Alex is like, well, I can't really explain over the phone. And Debbie tells her where he's out. She's like, wait, what? Like, Blake, he's been released. You vanished. You missed the arraignment. And we didn't have the maid's testimony. And so the judge just threw the case out. And Myra ran off. I can't reach her. And, you know, Alex is like, oh, my God. You know, she didn't realize how long she was out. And so she runs off, goes to find Myra in hopes that, you know, she'll be in time because she's worried that, Blake is going to do something. So she runs over to Myra's house and she's thinking, this is all my fault. I don't know what's happening to me, but I know exactly what's going to happen to Myra. You know, Alex has been down this road before. She's been a victim's advocate for a long time. It's like no restraining order, no reason for Blake to stay away, and nothing to stop him from doing what he's done to her 1,000 times. And sure enough, when she gets to Myra's house, Myra's apartment, Blake is there with a gun, holding a gun on Myra. And he's yelling at her, what did you do with my thumb drive? Do you know what you took from me? And Alex is there. Hey, distracts him. Like, what are you doing here? And although Blake has a reason not to shoot Myra because he needs to find that thumb drive, he doesn't have any reason not to attack Alex. So Myra actually jumps on him, bites his hand, and Blake punches her and says, you know what? The only reason you're not in the East River right now in an oil drum is because you hid that flash drive. And in that moment of stress, the power of the Witchblade manifests itself. And so Blake swings the gun around to point at Alex as this power starts to swirl, and Myra reaches out and grabs it. And we just see these tentacles come flying out of Alex, and they basically just eviscerate Blake like he's a pincushion. And that's how the first issue ends. So in the next issue, we see that Alex is in a police station. She's being interrogated. She says her name's Alexandra Marie Underwood. She's being interviewed by a detective, Victoria Rosland. And because Blake was a cop and because he was under investigation, and there was the possibility of, you know, this criminal case, this detective that's interviewing him is actually from the Department of Internal Affairs. So Alex is like, where do you want me to start? He's like, well, how about we start at Detective Grove's home the night that you killed him? And we flash back to 2 days earlier, and we see that Blake is indeed dead. Blake Groves was beating his wife, Myra, for years. And she finally gets up the nerve to press charges. And then somehow he walked, and Myra wasn't answering his phone. And I knew something was wrong, so I went there. And when I got there, he was holding his service weapon on. He was totally out of control, and I feared for my life and Myra's life. And, you know, I did what I had to do. And we see that, you know, looking back at that time, Myra's asking, is he dead? And she's, and Alex says, yeah, I think so. I'm sorry. And Myra's like, I'm not. And so Myra's like, well, you know, I'm glad he's gone. And Alex says, well, somebody's going to be here soon, so we have to make this look right. And the Witchblade is saying, good riddance, Alex. You did what you had to do. You know, you did humanity a favor. So we see outside the apartment that the cops showed up, and, you know, one of theirs, their own, is killed. So they're not exactly happy. But Myra's saying, you know, I did it. Blake would have killed us both. He told me he would if I tried to leave, and Alex saved my life because he came and distracted him, and I'm the one that shot him. And, you know, self-defense, ask anybody that was in the 78th precinct with Blake. They all knew what he was like, and none of them did anything. Alex was the only one. And they're like, well, I'd really like to hear that from her, but she's left. So Alex is thinking, I don't know how I killed Blake. I don't know what I am. I just know that I'm no longer the Alex Underwood that died on that roof. And that scares me. So this detective, Rosalind, is telling her, I know that it's tough. And, you know, you just need to tell us the truth, basically. So meanwhile, Alex goes back to see that mysterious stranger that met up with her in the alley. And she says, I need help. And he's like trying to explain to her, I know what you're going through. There's physical changes. And, I can see it in your eyes. So I'm not crazy. He's like, no, this is a gift, Alex. And I would never willfully let it hurt you. It can become a part of you. You can learn to control it. I can teach you. And Alex is like, I'm a rational person. I was a journalist. And this shouldn't be happening, but it clearly is. And so I'm trying to pretend it's not. And I need some information. Tell me what this thing is and how I can make it stop. And so he explains to her, it's had many names. Most people call it the Witchblade. It's a weapon against evil. No one really knows where it came from. But the wielders of the Witchblade are special women. They're chosen for a specific person or purpose, rather. And you were chosen at the moment of your death. And your bond is especially strong. And what you need to do is stop fighting it. You need to listen to it. Let it become a part of you. Because there are monsters out there. And they're going to try to destroy you. And they will try to eliminate you while you're still new and you're still vulnerable. So you need to take this seriously. So the next day at work, Alex is trying to process all this and see what's going on. And she's looking at that picture that Myra had left on her desk of her and Blake on vacation. And as she's looking at it, her power sort of flares up, I guess, just from, you know, the emotion of knowing she killed this guy and just the things that she's thinking. And so she drops it, like, right, the power flares and it's the pictures and the frame start smoldering. She drops it and it breaks. And what she finds that comes out of the back, what was hidden in the back of this picture frame is a flash drive. And as she's picking it up, that's the first time when she meets Detective Rosalind. And she says, oh, you're back at work already, Miss Underwood. That's dedication. And she says, yeah, I'm Detective Victoria Rosalind, and I'm here to have a chat. We didn't get to have last night, you know, after you killed him. And Alex says, hey, he should have never got released, and I didn't kill him. And Rosalind, you know, she knows, but she can't. It's what she knows and what she can prove, right? And she says, yeah, I know. Miss Groves is saying that she took him now. But either way, you were there, and maybe you wanted him to get out of jail to get payback for your client. Is that why you didn't show up to the hearing? And Alex is like, kind of look at her, and she goes, look, I just need you to come make a formal statement. So let's set up a time. And Alex says, sure, I'll come by the precinct after work. And so Alex then goes to see Debbie, Assistant District Attorney Maddox, and says, you know, I'm here because I couldn't just sit in my apartment, even though what went down last night was crazy. But I found this flash drive hidden in the photo that Myra gave us. And Debbie's like, look, where were you the other day? Right. What you, I couldn't find you after the hearing. You just vanished. And Alex is like, look, I messed up, and that's all I can say about it. So they look at the flash drive, and it looks like evidence of a bunch of corrupt cops getting payoffs, and there's pictures and all kinds of files and photos of police in Brooklyn and photos of police in Manhattan. And they're trying to figure it out. And they're like, well, was Groves actually investigating other cops? He's not in any of the photos. Like, no, most of the time, dirty cops are going to try to keep dirt on other dirty cops to blackmail them, right? So if they ever get caught, they can always flip. But the other thing they notice is a lot of these dirty cops and the people doing the payoffs, they have this interesting tattoo. It's like a star within a circle, and it has these funny symbols around the outside. So they think that Blake Groves had one too. So Ash, who's the guy that ran into Alex in the alley that first night and has been trying to explain the Witchblade to her, he and Alex go to the morgue to see if that tattoo is really there. And they find it. They find it there. But what they also find is, as they're talking about it and talking about why they could all be part of the same group or what's going on, and Alex trying to get more information, we see Blake Groves like literally rise from the dead. He knocks Blake into the next room and then starts choking Alex, saying, you don't seem happy to see me, right? But it's just you and me and a tray of surgical tools, so let's have some fun with that. And she manages to bite his ear and get him to let her go while Blake is grabbing her from behind. She grabs one of those scalpels that he's talking about and cuts his hand off, that has that symbol on it, and then stabs it. And at that moment, Blake like collapses. So clearly something to do with that symbol and that hand is what has allowed him to return from the dead, I guess. So Ash manages to come back in the room. He's recovered, and Alex says she's okay, more or less, but she's bleeding. And so they go outside, and Alex is like, man, I need to go to the ER. And Ash is telling her, no, you'll be all right. The Witchblade will, you know, help heal you. And Alex is like, maybe in whatever Eastern European hellhole you come from, emergency medicine is just pouring vodka on cuts, but this isn't a do-it-yourself wound, comrade. And he says, I'm Roma. Vodka's not my drink. So he's a gypsy. He's not actually Russian. But he says, you know what? Just give the nerves a few hours to knit. The Witchblade will heal you. You'll be as good as new. And he tells her, you really need to start using that weapon. You need to start using the Witchblade as it was intended. Because I'm here to protect the Witchblade, not the person who's wearing it. And if you don't allow the Witchblade to do what it needs to do, I don't really have anything to talk to you. You'll die soon enough, and I'll talk to the next host. Maybe they'll be, you know, more willing to cooperate. And he walks off, and Alex is like, come on, don't be that way. But he ignores her and walks off. So Alex is not about to give up, right? She just saw those pictures on the hard drive. So she decides to go to one of the clubs that she saw a bunch of pictures on, a strip club. And she's like, all right, just got attacked by a corpse. And I know there's a bunch of dirty cops with this symbol, and it's got to mean something. And she's kind of getting that sort of reporter's instinct, that journalistic itch to investigate. And she's thinking, man, I haven't felt like this since I was chasing down a story. And she goes to the strip club, and nobody wants her there. You know, she steps in the back private area, sees a bunch of cops getting lap dances and whatnot. And they basically kick her out, saying, you know, get out of here or I'll have 10 cops on your ass in no time. She's like, oh, really? And what are you going to do when it's the lead story on the 6 o'clock news? They're like, look, leave for your own good. And she's like, fine, I'm out of here. And she's trying to put the pieces together. Like, okay, so nothing overt at the strip club. A bunch of Blake's friends, you know, hanging out with Russian mob guys, getting lap dances. Like, half the cops in Brooklyn probably on the take from the Russian mob one way or the other. So why did he have those pictures? So she gives a call to her boss, and she's like, you know what? I think we need to meet for a drink. Let's kind of catch up on things and see where we're at. And Debbie's like, hi, can I take a rain check? Cause I need to go drop the thumb drive off with the investigators. And I got a bunch of prep work to do for court in the morning. And as she's on the phone, she gets attacked, and Alex hears her get attacked. And so she was just leaving the office. So of course Alex heads right over there to make sure she's okay. And Alex is there, or Debbie rather is there with a couple of other coworkers. And we find out that they stole the flash drive. So now she doesn't have any proof. Of course, the cameras weren't working. And, you know, some of the guys just think, well, probably just somebody that Debbie Maddox had put away at some point, and, you know, just out for revenge. And they don't really take it too seriously. But they don't know the things that Alex and Debbie know, especially Alex. So they did have a picture of Alex's family, and it says Maddox Family Reunion on it, and it's got a big stop sign drawn on it. So clearly the implication is, stop looking into whatever was on this flash drive, or we're going to hurt your family. So this has all been relayed to Detective Roseland, and she said, well, that's quite a story. She's like, hey, that's what happened. And Roseland's like, you know what? You were at the house when Blake Groves was supposedly going to kill his wife, and you made it through that, and whatever traumatic experience, and I let that slide. But now your boss gets attacked, and you're there and involved again, And, you know, one time you can excuse, but twice? That's a coincidence that I just can't buy, right? I know you're guilty of something, I just haven't figured out what. But right place, wrong time only works once. And we're already seeing it with you twice in just 2 days. You know, you're making a habit out of it. And she walks out. So she talks to her partner. Rosalind talks to her partner when she gets out there and is like, hey, can you take Vigilante Barbie down the street, make sure she gets home? She's like, okay, I guess. But why are you calling her Vigilante? And she goes, well, I did some background on her, and Alex Underwood has seen some stuff. She's been through some stuff. And her partner's like, well, why don't you just call the DA and charge her then, right? Rosalind's like, okay, I'm not about to charge her when we don't have, you know, the evidence. So just make sure nobody else in uniform dies today. Can you handle that? And he's like, okay. And Rosalind leaves. So this guy comes in. His name's Detective Barrows, and he says that he's going to see her home. But what Alex notices right away is the guy's footprints. She's seen them before. This guy's one of the guys that's on the take. And so she notices that he has a tattoo, the same tattoo that Blake Groves had, like right on his like upper chest. And she's looking at him kind of funny. And he says, well, you know what? Save your breath. I'm going to give you a chance. Your pal DA Maddox isn't the only one we can get to. So, I mean, basically telling her right there that he's dirty. And he picks up his phone and shows her a picture of her dad's house. And I don't know what that mark is or what Groves was into, but I'm not some helpless civilian, is how Alex responds. Like, she's not putting up with this for even 1 second. And she says, if you hurt any of my loved ones, there's going to be no place on earth you can hide from me. And Barrows is surprised. He's like, what? What mark? Wait, you can see that? She said, oh, yeah, I saw it on Blake, too. And she leaves. And Barrows goes running out as well, probably to go report to whoever he needs to report to. And Alex thinks, you know what? It may have been a mistake to tell him what I could see. But he just thought I was some dumb blonde. But now he knows that I know something. But for the first time, I'm starting to think maybe that's not a bad thing if they start to see me as a threat. And that's how the second chapter, second issue ends. So the third one starts off, and Alex Underwood's hanging out in a bar. She's drinking. She's thinking about how it's been a rough couple weeks. She died last week and then came back, and she's still Alex Underwood, but she's not who she was before. Not even close. And she used to know how the world worked and everything made sense. You're born, you die, you don't come back. And as she's thinking about all this walking home, Ash shows up and like, Ash, Stalker's not a good look on you. And he's like, that's my job to take care of you. She's like, look, I bounced back from a fatal bullet wound. I think I got it covered. Besides, I thought you were done with me because I'm not willing to play nice with this new piece of jewelry. It's like, look, it's been 2 weeks. You got to stop running away. Let me help you. At least let me teach you a little bit of control. But Alex is not having it. And she's thinking back to when she was in Afghanistan, still a reporter, 2012. And she ran into her old next door neighbor who was basically her crush, her first crush. And, you know, she's thinking about how small a world is that she could go halfway around the world and end up with the kid that she grew up with, right? The boy next door, 7,000 miles from home. And we see that something happened. His name is Johnny, and something happened with him while they were over there in Afghanistan. So this is all just a dream that Alex is having. She's remembering, and she's trying to handle it and stop her heart from racing and wondering why she's having these dreams, having these memories of Johnny, showing up again. So she, while she's getting ready for work, she gets a call. Somebody from her office is talking about a child abduction, and they can't get any information out of the mother. And they ask Alex if she can go and talk to the mother. So Alex heads over there, all the time thinking, she'd seen a lot of stuff even before Johnny came back into her life. But when he came back, that was sort of, that's what broke her. When whatever happened with Johnny happened, and going and talking to this mother with this missing child is bringing back other trauma. The thing that happened before, the thing that happened with her and Meg the summer that they turned 13. And after Johnny, work's the only way she knows how to cope. So work is where she goes when things get really bad. But when work is dealing with a missing child, it's bringing back other trauma. So she goes in, she talks to the mother, and she sees the mother differently than everybody else does. Maybe because of the Witchblade, we're not really sure. But she realizes that the mother is the one that hurt her daughter. And so the mother ends up getting arrested because the kid isn't just missing, she's dead. And so again, it's that instinct that Alex has, probably brought on by the Witchblade. And as they lead the mother away, Alex is thinking, not every mother loves their child. Not every child gets the parents that they deserve. But they're trying to put the pieces together. So Alex is thinking, I can't make this woman tell me what she did to her daughter, no more than I can take back what happened to Meg and me, but I got to try to understand it, understand how I knew, you know, how can I use this Witchblade? So she goes to this antique shop where this guy named Majil works, and he knows a lot about antiquities and ancient stuff and things like that. And she rings the bell and he says, we're closed. And she's like, remember me? He's like, ah, crap. So she's like, yeah, you meet all kinds of people in my work. Not all of them are innocent victims, but as far as scumbags go, Majil's not that bad. And Majil's like, look, our hours are clearly posted on the sign. She's like, well, your sign says Meta and Sons Fine Antiques, and that's a lie. Was Majil's store full of stolen shit and fake crap too long for the sign? She's like, look, or he's like, look, against my better judgment and because of your considerable persuasive charms, I testified against two Russians with 10,000 reasons to want me dead, and I did my bit, so why are you harassing me? So she's like, look, I need information on this mark. So she shows him a picture on her phone of the tattoo on Blake's severed hand, and he does a little research, and he's like, ah, I'm not really sure. It's probably what's known as a hex mark. It enables powerful supernatural beings to basically inhabit other humans and possibly control them. And she's like, what? How does that work? He's like, I don't know. I'm just reading from this book out loud. The guy that wrote it's been dead for a couple centuries. Otherwise, you could ask him. And Alex is thinking, you know, 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have bought any of this. It's amazing how fast your mind can accept these, you know, incredible, crazy things. And while they're poring over the book, Majel notices the bracelet. He's like, oh, that's a nice piece. Pre-Byzantine, silver band, unusual stone. Can I look at it? And she's like, I wouldn't. And he tries to take it off. He's like, it's stuck on me. Well, okay. Well, if you ever change your mind, you want to get rid of the bracelet. And Alex is like, trust me, that's all I think about. So while they're there having this conversation, all of a sudden we see this purple smoke start coming out of one of the antique mirrors he has. And these black tendrils come firing out of them. And the Witchblade calls out to Alex saying, it's found you. It's followed you. You're in danger. And he's like, oh, no. So she yells at him to get down, and she manifests the power again. And this green flash of light. And all of a sudden, she uses it like a whip, but she's still knocked back by these black tentacles. And Majel's kind of hiding under the table going, please tell me you can kill that thing. She's like, what do you even see right now? And he's like, wow, the most frightening thing I've ever seen in my life. And you're looking like a demonic Amazon from hell. So can you please at least get up and save my ass? She's like, I'm trying. Again, she doesn't really know what she's doing. But through some sort of instinct, she's trying to fight back as best she can. And just as the tentacles are about to reach out and grab her again, Majil actually finds some courage that maybe he didn't know he had. He blasts it with a fire extinguisher and it runs off. And he says, you know what? You're going to pay for everything you broke. She's like, you're welcome. He's like, what? You did? is this a brain tumor? Am I losing my mind? Like, what did I just see? And she's like, I don't know. I really don't. It's projection or something. It seems to like mirrors. And Mae Jill's like, and you are, what about you? You were, you know, flinging powers around. She said, well, it's complicated. And you've been the first person to be able to see what I've done. Well, except for this weird guy named Ash, who's been following me. But, you're the only person I've run into that's remotely okay with this. And it would be nice to have somebody to talk to. And she's like, Majel's like, I'm not okay with it. She says, join the club. So she's thinking back to when Blake rose from the dead and was attacking her. And she's just trying to make sense of it and just having a really, really tough time. Because these things are happening to her and they're coming from all different directions. And she's just feeling really overwhelmed. And she's like, man, I thought I had problems before with debt and the nightmares and the ex-fiance I couldn't look in the eye. And now what I wouldn't give to have those problems. So she heads home and she's being followed again. And without even turning around, she says, I told you to stop following me, Ash, but it turns out it's not Ash. It's somebody else. And he says, I got a message from you, or for you rather, from all of us, for Blake. Maybe we can't get to you, but we can still hurt you. So you need to quit. You need to stop trying. And he shows her a picture of Debbie Maddox, her boss. So she goes to jail. Alex goes to jail. She says, you know, at least I can keep trying to do my job. And she's talking to the woman who's child disappeared, and the woman is saying, look, they're transferring me to Rikers tomorrow right after the bail hearing. And Alex is like, I don't want you to worry about it. There's no evidence you did anything to your child. But if you tell me what happened, you know, I'm not going to be angry. I won't stop trying to help you. I want to get to the bottom of it. And the woman says, I know. And then the woman's eyes turn black and she says, I'm going to make her suffer and I'm going to rip those noble intentions from your guts and string you up with them. I'll never let her go. And it turns out this woman is possessed by a demon as well. And so Alex is like, I don't know about that. You know, I just tangled with one of you before and I managed to beat it. So, and meanwhile, Alex is like ripping out different parts of her clothing. And the woman says, well, are you looking for something? A hex mark? I'm not some shadow hand puppet. I'm inside this body until I see fit to release her, and I'm never going to release her. I ride these bodies till they're in the ground, and every one of them goes to the electric chair crying their innocence. And a coward who marks his men and hides his face, that's not who I am. I'm more than that. I'm infinite, and I'm terrible, and I'm darkness, and I'm the black tide, and make no mistake about it, I'm coming. And Alex manages to hit her with the chair and kind of knock her out and thinks, well, that could have gone better. And as the prison guards hear the commotion and come into the interrogation room, the woman kind of regains consciousness and saying, no, it happened again. It's clear that she's been losing time. And the cops are asking her if she's okay. And she's saying, no, I'm fine. And the cops are, the guards are apologizing, saying, sorry, it took us long to get in here. There was an electric surge or power surge and the electric locks went offline. And Alex was like, yeah, probably the cameras too, right? There's no evidence that this woman is basically possessed. And he says, yeah, afraid so. But, you know, this crazy lady killed her kid, so it doesn't really matter what happens to her. And Alex is like, don't say that. It's not what you think. And so Alex says, it's fine. I need to leave. I need to go. And now that she's, again, feeling completely overwhelmed, she's finally willing to ask for help. And so she goes to see Ash and said, you said that you'd help me. And that's what I'm here for. Did you mean it? He says, of course, it's my duty. She says, okay, well, I need you to teach me how to perform an exorcism then. They need to get rid of the demon that's inside this mother. So that's how the third chapter ends. Fourth one starts off. We're in a church and we see Alex is kind of laying there and she's thinking about demons. She's like, man, we all have them. Mine just happened to be flesh and blood. And before any of this, before the Witchblade, before I died the first time, I was no stranger to demons. I had plenty of them myself. And I knew what it was like to look in the face of evil. And she's thinking back of when she saw this missing child's mother for the first time and saw that demon inside of her. She's thinking about the demon that attacked her in Majel's shop. She's thinking about confronting the woman in prison and seeing it. And apparently a week has gone by. We get a flashback back to Asher's place, and Asher's showing her different moves, and we find out that Alex grew up doing Krav Maga, which is sort of the Israeli art of self-defense. And ever since she quit the network, she's been taking those classes again a couple times a week. But although that might be adequate against a human, Asher tells her, you know, you're not going against anything remotely human, so you need to be better. And so he tells her, well, you need to accept what the Witchblade is, and you've got to be better, basically. And she's like, well, this isn't even what I came here for, right? I came here because you're supposed to show me how to perform an exorcism, right? So I can fight demons or monsters or whatever. I'll fight them. I'm a fast learner. I'll figure that out. But what I need you to help me do is perform this exorcism. And he's like, well, an exorcism is not going to do you any good if you can't control the Witchblade, because you're going to, you know, pull the demon out of whoever you pull it out of, and you're not going to be able to fight it off. And Alex is like, look, you haven't given me any sort of practical advice. So I've accepted this is happening, and I've accepted that you're my new best friend when it comes to this stuff. But you're not telling me everything, and I can't do this if you won't really help me. And Ash was like, I don't even know where to start. Like, how do I explain something that is as elemental as the snow? So meanwhile, Alex is back at work, and her boss is telling her, look, she looks like crap. And Alex is like, I'm sorry. I'm fine. I'm here. I answered your text. What's going on? She's like, okay, Alex, look, don't freak out. But I had my buddy Andy do some research, and Detective Rosalind, she requested a search for all your electronic records. Alex is like, what? Like, what does that woman want with me? I saved Myra's life because NYPD didn't do its job and lock up Blake. And now she's harassing me. And Debbie's like, that's probably exactly why she's harassing you. Right. She's trying to rattle you. And Debbie's like, I have a friend who's a lawyer, and you know, he specializes in police harassment, and he can probably help you, and we can get it shut it down. Alex is like, I'm not wasting money on a lawyer because she has this, you know, vendetta against me. And Debbie's like, okay, look, I just can't have this blowback on me. Don't do anything stupid, because if you go to jail, my job gets harder. And Alex is like, I'm not going to do anything stupid. I'm just going to go back to doing my job. Isn't that what you want? And Debbie's like, yeah, I do want that, but there's something clearly going on with you that you're not telling me. So Alex finds herself back on Roosevelt Island. She goes back to the house where the child went missing, and she confronted the mother for the first time. And while she's there, she sees what looks to be the ghost or a spirit of this little girl. And she tries to talk to her, and she follows her. And she walks out onto this pier over the river, and the girl's ghost says, you see everything, but you don't see me. And as Alex walks out there, the pier collapses underneath her, and she's attacked again under the water. It's all been a big trap. It wasn't even really the ghost of the girl. And so Alex has to use the power of the Witchblade again to fight off these tentacles or tendrils of darkness or whatever it is that's attacking her. And she manages to do so. So she goes to see Majel, and you know, she's trying to explain it. She's like, look, I almost drowned following a little dead girl off a dock, and you're the only person who knows about this that I can trust. Asher being the only other person that knows about it that she feels like she can't trust. And she's like, look, I just need you to give me a straight answer, Majel. Like, this is no longer an academic exercise. the thing that you saw that came out of the mirror, it's not going to stop coming. So I need some real advice on how to fight it. And I like anything you can give me, because next time I might not make it out of the river. And he's like, okay, well, I did go to Oxford and I had this crazy professor who taught about ancient civilizations, and he had this crazy book. And if you want to read it, I thought it was just a story, but you know, maybe there's more to it than that. And so he starts telling her about how this book tells a story of the world going all the way back to the beginning of civilization, when the world was just darkness and chaos, and how there was this evil warlord that rose to power, and he was not a man but a demon, and no one knew how to stop him. No one knew where he came from, or you know, how they found their way, but there were a few that managed to resist the demon's influence over the land, and eventually 13 of them, they rose up and they banished the demon to the netherworld. And of course, top cow fans will know 13 is the number of, you know, artifacts when we talk about Witchblade and Magdalena and darkness and all that. So clearly that's what they're referring to. So Majel says, yeah, they were called the artifacts and they bestow a noble power, but they also can bestow madness and homicidal impulses and ultimately death. And the world turned and the artifacts disappeared, but they do seem to resurface from time to time when things get chaotic and horrible. And maybe that's what you have here. You know, last time we heard of the Witchblade, it was after the Second World War, and nobody knows who had it, with the Nazis or the Vatican or whoever. But that's the last we know of it. And so as Majel's finishing up the story, Alex thinks that she sees that ghost again. And so she says, look, take my phone, call the number for Ash and tell him that I'm following this girl, this missing girl, Natalie. And, you know, this is our one chance to save her. And so that's how Alex ends up at the church. She follows this this ghost of Natalie, and she's thinking, man, I'm not really prepared to fight whatever this demon is. And I'm not sure I can win, but I don't really have a choice, right? The Witchblade has saved me twice before, and I've got to let it lead, because I have a feeling it's the only one that can put an end to this. And when Alex goes in, she's attacked by the mother, who somehow, we don't know how, has managed to get out of prison and is attacking her. But what the demon does is, it at various times it pulls back and it lets the woman, the mother, actually talk. And it makes it hard for Alex, right? It makes it hard for her to fight against it. Because at the end of the day, it's this demon that's in possession of the woman. The woman hasn't done anything wrong. She's a victim as well. So Majel then shows up, but Alex is... she's unconscious. She's this fight that she's having with this woman, it's not even in the real world. So she's not even out. For all we know, she could still be in prison. This fight that she's having, it's all in her mind. You know, the when we saw on the first page of this chapter where Alex was laying in the church surrounded by candles, that's where it's happening. It's happening on this, this other plane. And so, the woman is saying, you know, this is her true spirit rather than the demon. She's saying, I remember being on the couch a few days ago, talking to Natalie, and then nothing. And so Alex is thinking back to when her life changed forever. And this is when she first meets Johnny Myers. He was a boy that had moved into the house next door, and they made friends. But it just so happened to be on that same day that whatever terrible thing befell Alex that she's talked about before, with when the summer that she turned 13, along with her friend Meg. So Ash then shows up at the church and she's telling Majel, well, she's gone, and like, oh, I can't believe that she's dead. She's like, oh, she's not dead. But she's just gone. And the demon that was in the woman has been purged. And that demon, the infection, it's now spread to Alex. So Alex's exorcism has worked. The woman has been freed. But now Alex is the one who's infected. And whether or not she can survive that infection, maybe, maybe not. And we do see that through the, you know, her skin, there's what looks like these gray lines. And yeah, but again, I'm not real sure. And that's a problem that goes throughout the book. And I'll talk about it more in the end when I kind of review everything instead of just recapping. It's like Caitlin Kittredge had some really big ideas, but maybe not quite enough room to fit everything in. Cause there are parts of the narrative that seem like it's missing. Like the last time we saw the missing girl's mother, she was in jail. And then it seems like she's not in jail. And then we find out, well, no, she's talking to Alex, and Alex is, it's all in a dream world. But then we find out, no, the mother's really there. And the demon transferred from one, you know, from the mother to Alex. And so it's like, well, but how did she get out in the first place? Was it what Alex said about, well, they didn't have enough evidence to hold her, but we didn't see that. That was never told. So it's insinuated. But anyway, there's various times during the narrative where it just seems like there's just like another panel here or panel there, a quick remark, even a exposition box or dialogue box might help sort of clear up some of that stuff. So anyway, Ash says, yeah, it's up to her. We do find out the woman's name is Perdita. But they don't know if Alex is going to be able to survive. Like she's, Asher does say, well, I don't know how well you're acquainted with Alex, but she's a bit of a force of nature. She's going to need help to fight off this thing. She's going to need the voice of somebody she trusts. So maybe if we could get her friend Debbie here, that might help out. So meanwhile, Alex is still possessed by this demon, and what the demon is trying to do is trying to break her by making her see her most terrifying memories. So we do find out what happened to Alex that summer that she turned 13 that was so terrible. That was the day that she met Johnny, like I mentioned, and Johnny invited her over to watch movies, but she wanted to go take her bike home and get a Band-Aid first. And while she was going, she got kidnapped, basically. And we don't get a lot of details, but apparently there was some terrible serial killer type person who was kidnapping young girls at that time. And so when Alex wakes up, she's in this basement of this cabin, this remote cabin. And she finds herself back there and she's saying, no, I got out of this place. I got away. And the demon's telling her, not this time. This time, this is the cellar where you die. Again, trying to break her, right? Saying, who knows about this place anyway? Who knows about the time you spent here? You don't think about it. You try to bury it so deep so you don't remember, so you don't think about it. But it's strange, the things that we keep secret, right? And you were already dead. But then the Witchblade brought you back, but now I've infected you. And just like you can't get rid of the Witchblade, you can't get rid of me. I'm going to control you, and through you, I'm going to control the Witchblade. And the Witchblade's talking to her, Alex as well, saying, no matter where you are, Alex, you are the Witchblade. I'm you. And Alex is talking to the demon, saying, you don't scare me. You know, you think you can just bring up these bad memories and break you? No, I survived this place. I survived worse. Do you want to fight? You got one. And that's how chapter 4 ends. So in chapter 5, she's remembering how it starts off where she's remembering how she did get out of the cabin and she was running through the woods. And she's thinking, when I escaped the first time, I didn't see a soul until I got to the highway. Nobody was chasing me. But that was then. This time, who's chasing her is Johnny Myers. So again, it's the demon trying to use memories that are painful for her And so Johnny is the demon is manifesting and looking like Johnny, saying, "There's nowhere to run, Alex. It's the end of the line. Be as brave as you want, but we both know the truth. You use that thing on your wrist, but you don't control it, and you're holding back, and you're afraid, and you're trapped in here with me, useless and broken." And Alex is like, "You know what? I'm not." And she finally starts to give in. But just as that give in to using the Witchblade and kind of letting go. But just at that moment, something else calls out. And the demon screams out, "No, she's mine. She's mine." And Alex is thinking, that's the thing about survival. No matter how fast you run or how strong you are, survival, it always comes down to who wants it more, right? And this demon that has was infecting Perdita and then transferred over to Alex, all of a sudden it's facing something much bigger, something that's been hunting Alex, the thing that came through the mirror, the thing that attacked her in the river. And this relatively smaller demon that has infected Alex is saying, "No, I got to her first. You know the rules. Bottom feeders, first show up, first to flame out." And it basically, the larger evil force, the malevolent force, the force that is the one that has all these human familiars that have the marks, that have the tattoos. It says, "Hello, Witchblade." And it also looks like Johnny, but a much younger version. And it sweeps aside the other demon that has infected Alex with no problem at all. And Alex is like, "Why do you keep showing me Johnny? That's just wrong at this point." And this much more powerful evil force says, "Well, no, I'm not really here. This is just your conscious mind putting a face on me, right? We can speak, but I have to do it through you. So I've got to use your memories as like the mouthpiece. And whoever this kid is, he's somebody you hang on to. He's buried deep in your subconscious. So my experience, somebody's buried this deep, it's guilt or love or maybe both." And he reaches out to touch Alex. She's like, don't touch me. Don't touch me." And he says, "Well, come on, Alex, you're not stupid. You knew it was me." And she wants to know, "Well, why did you help me?" He said, "Well, because Witchblade, I needed somewhere to talk where you'd actually listen to me. So I let this other demon infect you so that I could then kill it and come in and talk to you and explain how you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? Like, this is my city. New York belongs to me." And imagine my surprise when the Witchblade showed up again, right under my nose. And I could complain and I could say, Witchblade's not even supposed to be in New York and, you know, but that's just kind of a waste of time. So I need you to listen to me, because you won't listen to me out there in the real world. Maybe you'll listen to me in this one. You just need to leave. You just need to leave, and it's live and let live." And Alex is like, "Wait, just leave New York?" And the entity says, "Yeah, there's plenty of other places where the Witchblade can go and do good work. Syria, Afghanistan, I hear Detroit's bad. Just get out of my city. Go wherever you want to go. Live and let live." And Alex is like, "And if I don't?" And the entity says, "Well, then we're going to have a different conversation. You're going to like it a lot less, because it's going to involve everybody you care about being dead with you on top for good measure." And Alex says, "You know what? I'll stop you." And then he says, "You know what? You're so minor league. You're holding back. And go to hell, Witchblade. I warned you." And he throws her off the bridge that they're on in this imaginary world. And as they're falling, Alex says, I'll see you there. And splashes into the water with the entity saying, I'll see you in the light world. You're going to wish you'd taken my offer, Alex. And then Alex actually wakes up in the church with Debbie there. Perdita's there. Ash is there. Majel's there. And all Alex wants to know is, did I hurt anybody? Like, No, you didn't hurt anybody. And Debbie wants to call this in. And everybody else is like, no, you can't. And Alex is like, look, I'll explain it to Debbie, but no cops. I just want to go home. And so actually a little bit of a happy ending. It's a little bit of a victory, the first one Alex has had. And so she has to confide in Debbie and explain what's going on. So she said, yeah, there was a demon and it got thrown out by this other entity. And, you know, that's all I know. I've got this, you know, bracelet on me and I've got these powers and I've been thrown in this world of monsters and demons. And so they get back to Alex's apartment and we see that Alex has been busy at work. That old reporter instinct dies hard and she's got maps and, you know, she's been tracking events and where these cops have been with these marks. And Debbie's like, Jesus, Alex. And Alex is like, I was a reporter for a long time. I can't turn it off. She's like, well, what are you doing? Blake Groves is dead. And this is all being investigated by internal affairs. And Alex is like, by Rosalind and her partner? That's rich. And so Debbie's like, well, what are you going to do? Alex says, I'm just going to take a shower. But if you think I'm losing my mind, you know, join the club. I'm doing what I can. So later, Alex is thinking that, you know, Debbie means well. She always does. She wouldn't be working as a district attorney if she didn't mean well, because she could make a lot more money in the private sector, right, as a defense attorney. So the only lead that Alex really has is Rosalind's partner, right? He's got that mark on his chest. And so she ends up at One Police Plaza trying to figure out and get some clues about what's going on. She's been following him all over for the last few weeks. And just so far, just, you know, the typical run-of-the-mill stuff. And she's waiting for something, for you know, something bigger that she could actually do something about, that she can actually stop, that she can, that might actually lead her to this bigger demon that she wants to banish from New York. So eventually she follows him to a restaurant and overhears about how there's going to be a shipment of prostitutes showing up. And it's clear that Barrows doesn't have a real good relationship with this other guy that is in charge of bringing in the women, right? He fancies himself as some sort of a modern day godfather. Frank Leonetti's his name. Wannabe good fella is how Alex puts it. If those still existed, but he's really just a piece of shit pimp pining for a bygone era. So there's some animosity there between Barrows and Leonetti. Barrows is mad that they keep bringing in these strung out girls and says, you know, you need to do better. We need better than these Russian broads that are all strung out. And he says, you'll get what I give you. Or you're going to end up like your buddy, Blake Groves. So again, there's a little bit of animosity there. So as Alex sneaks out the back of this, the strip joint where she's heard all this happen, she runs into none other than Detective Rosalind, who says, it's a little early in the day for cheap booze and prostitutes, Miss Underwood. She's, and so Alex is like, you finally worked up the nerve to talk to me face to face instead of sneaking around getting warrants and tapping my phones. She's like, look, I followed you because you showed up at One Police Plaza. So what do you think's going on? And Alex is like, wow, you're either a really believe I'm dangerous or you're really stupid. And Rosalind says, well, I'm not stupid. Look, neither am I, Alex says. I didn't kill Blake, and I don't know why you're harassing me instead of arresting these corrupt cops. So it's clear these two need to get together and work together, but they're having a tough time because, as you know, every good cop who tries to change the system from within will tell you, it's complicated. Right? It's always complicated. And we also find out an interesting fact, because Rosalind says, I looked into you, you know, they never caught him, did they? The man who abducted you and Megan Masters back in Philly. And Alex is like, do not go there. She's like, look, I'm not surprised you turned out the way you did, knowing what you've been through, but you crossed the line, Alex, and if you go much further, you're not going to be able to get back across. And Alex is like, well, that's pretty funny coming from a corrupt cop lecturing me about crossing lines. And that gets Rosalind fired up. She's saying, I'm not on the take. I work hard within the system that's rotting from the inside, trying to do the best I can. So you need to watch how you talk to me. Alex is like, okay, I'm sorry, but your partner's a bad guy. Why don't you start with him? And that's where we get the, well, it's complicated. Well, it's always complicated. So they go their separate ways. Later, Alex is at the warehouse where they're supposed to be another shipment, right? These women, these prostitutes are supposed to be showing up. And as soon as they open the doors, Leonetti's actually killed. So come to find out, Barrows didn't take the threats or the animosity that was going between them very well. And it's a bit of a shootout. And, you know, we know Barrows is just sort of a vessel for that larger evil entity. But when the firefight breaks out, the Witchblade manifests itself for the first time in the armor that we see. And it's much, much different than the Sarah Pazzini sort of metal bikini. She's all black with kind of these green and blue tentacles. And it's a very, very different look. But she looks pretty cool, I have to admit. And very, very powerful. So she goes and confronts Barrows, who has manifested, basically the evil entity has manifested through Barrows. And he was the one that made the call to kill Leonetti. And it's the Witchblade speaking through Alex, saying, this is not your city, not anymore. I'm not leaving. You're the one that needs to run far and as fast as you can and take everybody with your mark with you, because your time in my city is up. And that's how the fifth issue ends. So in the final issue of the arc, or final chapter six, we see that we flash back to Afghanistan 2012, where Alex was there still as a reporter, embedded in country with Johnny Myers. And apparently their caravan got attacked. And that's another of the traumas that Alex has had to live through. And we assume that's what happened to Johnny, why he's not around. He died in that attack. So we don't see much. We don't learn much else other than just seeing the caravan attacked. When we flash back to present day, Alex is in a hospital. She's brought in all the wounded from this, or brought in the women rather that were being smuggled in. She asks the doctor how they're doing. They're like, well, they're going through a withdrawal, and you know, it's a good thing you did. We're doing the best we can. And Alex is like, yeah, great. So they'll have heroin withdrawal for days to look forward to. And then after that, they're going to get deported back to wherever they came from. And the doctor says, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and I can tell that you don't have hope, but these five women are no longer being shot full of drugs and repeatedly raped in an illegal brothel. So take the win, right? It might not be a big win, but take the win. And Alex says, okay, I will. And then she gets an alarm on her phone and realizes that she's late for an appointment. And she runs off before waiting for the police, who are supposed to be on their way. Where she's going is Columbia University, where she actually meets Professor Myers, who's Johnny's mother. And apparently today is the day of Johnny's death. And so they're there to celebrate, and they always go to church and light a candle. But Alex's phone is going off, and Professor Myers, Johnny's mother, can tell that she's really busy. And she says, you know what, I'm keeping you. And Alex is like, no, let's go light the candle in the chapel for him. Professor Myers is like, no, it's okay. My son wouldn't want us sitting in a church feeling sorry for him like we do every year. And I know you have a job and it's important, so go. And Alex says, okay, well, I'll see you next year. And Professor Myers says, well, I'll understand if you don't. So it isn't actually the DA's office who's calling Alex. It's actually Ash. And so she goes to his apartment, and he's not there. So she calls Debbie and says, I need your help. You can yell at me later, but I'm texting you an address and I need you to come. Just you, no cops. It's life and death. So it definitely looks like the place has been ransacked. Windows are broken and Alex is trying to figure out what exactly is going on, who might have attacked him. Obviously, she's worried that it might be that evil entity that she's basically at war with. Next, she tries to call Majel, tells him to come, no questions asked. Basically, same deal as she told Debbie. She's basically putting her her team together. So Debbie and Majel show up and are trying to figure out, okay, what's going on? Where might he be? They're looking around, and they're just not sure how to track Ash or figure out where he might be going. And Alex just feels helpless. She's like, man, I'm not used to feeling helpless. I spend my days being the person who helps the victims and figure out what they need to do, get justice for the ones who need it. And, you know, I'm not sure. And so actually in the, in all the paraphernalia, as they're looking around, what they find is they find a bunch of pictures of Ash, like throughout the years. Like, it's clear that this guy's been alive for like a really, really long time. And Alex is thinking, well, the truth's supposed to make you free, but oftentimes it punches you in the face. So either Ash is a whiz at Photoshop, or he's been lying, because he's a heck of a lot older than what he appears to be. And Debbie even says, I'm almost hoping he's a vampire. And Majel's like, well, he's lying about his age. A lot of guys do that. Like, well, there's lying about your age, and then there's being alive for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. So as they're trying to figure out what to do, Alex's phone rings and it's a video call, and there's Asher and somebody's speaking. We don't know who, but we do know it is that evil entity's voice saying, say hello to your lady friend, Asher. She's saying, look, Alex, this is a courtesy call. I can get to you anytime. I can get to your friends anytime. And I went for Asher, but the next time it could be Debbie or your dad or any of them. So you need to leave. And Asher's like, don't listen to him. Don't try to come for me. And Alex is like, well, fine, what do you want? So, okay, you come alone, give yourself up, and I'll consider leaving the rest of your loved ones alone. And once I cut off your hand and rip off that bracelet, then everything will be fine. And he hangs up. So then we see this, whoever the demon is writing in currently, talking to Asher saying, well, see how long it takes your lady friend to get here. And you're sure the strong silent type. So what were you? Special forces, private military, you put up a pretty good fight. And I got to admit, good thing this body's only a temporary ride, because I'd be pissed. You beat it up pretty good. And as we pull back from the body, we see it's actually Barrows that he's taken over fully. So Asher doesn't say much. Again, he playing the silent type. And the demon says, well, you know what, Asher, that's even your real name. Alex, she thinks that you're on her side. And the truth is, you're lying to her, you know? And it's going to be so sweet when I tell her that you're just another person who's lied to her. And she's going to die looking at you, knowing that you betrayed her. So we're getting some hints that maybe Asher isn't who we're told he is. Or isn't who he has told Alex that he is. I mean, he did kind of tell her, hey, I'm here to watch over the Witchblade. Not you necessarily, but is he part of a secret society? He wants a Witchblade for himself. There's something about him that this evil entity thinks he knows anyway, and thinks that Alex wouldn't like. So, for his part, Asher's like, you know what? If you believe that, you're a fool. It doesn't matter. Alex is the Witchblade, and you've gone too long unchecked in this city. You're overconfident, and you don't even realize that you've picked a fight you can't win. So Alex has decided that she can't do it alone, not even with the help of Debbie or Majel. And she actually decides to confide in Detective Roslyn, who's been following her, of course. So she goes out and knocks on her car and says, not the way to get on my good side, Mrs. Underwood, as Rosalind spills her coffee. She's startled when Alex knocks on the window. And Alex wants to know, where's your partner? She says, well, he's taking personal time. Like, well, I think he has a friend of mine. And Rosalind's like, I don't know what you mean. And Alex is like, cut the shit. You know he's dirty. You have to, because you're not terrible at his job, at your job. So why protect him? And she's like, look, you got a lot to learn about the world, right? Like, I'm lucky that I have this job. And we find out that Rosalind has a prosthetic leg. She got hurt in a narcotics bust years ago. And she was lucky that she was even able to stay on the force and to fight every day. And the only job she could get in the force was internal affairs, which is kind of pariahs. And so we see them kind of bonding over the sort of the struggles that they've both gone through. And Alex is appealing to Rosalind, saying, look, your partner has my friend Ash. And if you know where they are, we can at least get one bad cop out of the department. And I don't have to go to another funeral for somebody who got hurt protecting me. And so Rosalind says, well, I know he bought a closed down restaurant out in Brighton Beach. It was like an investment property. And Alex is like, great, what's the address? And Rosalind's like, nah, it'd be faster if I drive us there. So they head there, and Rosalind's supposed to hang back and be sort of the backup. Tells Rosalind to wait outside. And Alex says, or Alex tells Rosalind to wait outside. She's like, you're not a cop. Why don't you wait for SWAT? She's like, no, I can go in myself. I'm a civilian. If we, you know, everything that I find will be admissible in trial. And we know Alex is not thinking about trial. She just knows she needs to be out of sight of Rosalind, go in and be able to use the Witchblade powers. So she's thinking, Ash is in there, and the demon thinks Ash is a bargaining chip. I've got to find a way to prove him wrong. It was kind of too easy to find him, but maybe they think that I'm on their home turf, and so that I'm weak. And meanwhile, she shows up, and they say, see, Asher, I told you she'd come. Women like her, they have this avenging angel complex, right? And they have to feel they're more powerful than they actually are. And Alex is like, you know, you talk a lot of shit for somebody using somebody else's body like a rideshare. So why don't we discuss what we need to discuss face to face? And the demon says, well, I thought you'd never ask. And he then manifests, but not as Barrows. He's left Barrows. He's no longer riding Barrows. He's back in the body of Lanetti, who died, but he's back. And Barrows is even like, what the Lanetti? I shot you. And Lanetti's like, oh, that's right. You did. Frank Lanetti isn't my name. Obviously, he's made up. I made him up. He's just like a middle level scumbag to keep the wheels turning. And, you know, had a good thing going for the last 15 or 20 years, a push here, a pull there. And everybody thought I was just this middle manager guy. But really I was running everything, you know, like even Barrows, he thought it was his idea to smuggle these girls in from Europe and sell them to brothels, but it was all me, man. All I had to do was sit back and just keep putting my marks on people, all the new converts. And Alex is like, well, we're all very impressed. Do you always talk this much? She's like, all of us what, Alexandra? She says, demons, that's what you are, right? You're a blood-sucking leech. You don't even have the balls to face anybody. You hide and you manipulate things from behind the behind the little meat puppets that you have. And that pisses him off. He's like, do I look like I'm hiding now? She says, oh, there it is. You're not even human. You're still the same. The second somebody threatens you or challenges you, you get all nasty. You start calling names. And really, he doesn't even realize what he's doing. Like, you may say Alex doesn't have a lot of experience with the Witchblade, but she knows how to deal with these kind of scumbags, right? She's seen it a bunch of times. So she's basically goading him into a fight. And Asher's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Alex, you can't. You don't know how to use the Witchblade properly. And the demon's like, yeah, you don't even know what you're doing. You're all, you know, nerve and instinct. You think I haven't broken a dozen just like you? And Alex says, no, I don't. I think I'm something new, something you haven't faced before, and I scare you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be trying so hard to make me feel small. You wouldn't be trying so hard to run me off. And the entity says, you know what? I have 1,000 bodies in the city. You destroy one, I'll just jump to another. You'll never get rid of me. And Alex is like, see, that's where I think you're wrong. this body, Linetti, he's yours. You made him. So I kind of think if I destroy it, I destroy you. And all those people who got that stupid tattoo, none of them are going to matter. And she goes on the offensive and attacks him. And he tries to sort of pull from her memories again and, you know, use the trauma that she's been through in the past to weaken her, to scare her. So the scene shifts from being in the abandoned restaurant they're in to being back on the roadside in Afghanistan, where everything went sideways for her. Her, you know, her childhood love died and whatnot. And the entity is saying that dead kid again, he's way more of an enemy to you than I'll ever be, right? You're infected with his memories, and you may wear the Witchblade, but you're still human, and humans always be weak. And Alex is like, you know what? Johnny Dine made me what I am, and it sent me to the spot where I became the Witchblade, and you think that makes me weak? And she manifests the Witchblade again fully for only the second time, where we see her in that armor where it's all black, swirls of green green and blue, and we see the tattoo of Barrow start to smoke, and Alex just full-on frontal assault against this entity. And the entity saying, I gave you a chance, Alexandra. I tried to let you walk away, but now you're going to reap the whirlwind. I'm like nothing you've ever seen. I'm Legion. I will never die. And Alex is like, yeah, you really love the sound of your own voice, right? Impressed with your own strength, and stabs right through him. And there's a big flash, and he disappears. And she thinks, man, I've tried so hard to hold on because I knew how quickly everything could fall apart. It always does. Whether you're on your own street in broad daylight, like when she got kidnapped when she was a kid, or on the side of a dirt road in Afghanistan, like when the caravan that Johnny was a part of got attacked, or on a rooftop in the snow where she got shot in the first issue. And she's let it all go, and she has vanquished this demon, we think. I could easily see him showing back up again, but I will say this. The tattoo, the mark that Barrow's had is gone now. It's not there anymore. So maybe he really has been defeated, or at the very least is so weak that he can no longer control any of those other people that he put his mark on. Or maybe Alex really did manage to defeat him. So at that moment, Rosalind runs, busts in the door saying, nobody tell me what happened in here, because I don't want to know. She says, Alex, you better get Asher out of here before the SWAT team shows up. And if you don't want me to keep my memory foggy, I don't think we should cross paths again. And Barrows is saying, Victoria, help me. And she's like, help you? You're under arrest, man. You have the right to remain silent. How about that? So Ash and Alex are walking outside and saying, look, I saw what was in your loft, Asher. Is that even your real name? He says, it's the only one I want to use. She's like, oh, man, you're so full of it. You lied to me. I don't know who you are. I never should have trusted me. He says, look, you shouldn't do this alone. I know I wasn't honest with you. I couldn't tell you everything. And Alex is like, I'm not alone. I have Debbie, I have Majel, and I don't need whatever baggage that you're bringing. And he tries to appeal. There's like, Alex, just listen. No. Get in your car and get out of here, Ash, before I lose my temper. So he leaves, and I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Ash. And as soon as he's gone, Alex is thinking, you know, all the fury, everything that I had, all my anger against him, it just kind of melts away. And I don't feel anything but cold and empty. And I am alone with this thing, this Witchblade that speaks to me. And it's capable of great good. It allows me to do great things, but also terrible things. And what do I do now? Like, you know, I was able to take the minor demon away from the woman that was infected with it. I was able to defeat this larger entity. But what happens now? So she calls Debbie and says, hey, can you come and pick me up? I'm in Brighton Beach. And Debbie picks her up, takes her home. Majel's there with them. And they take Alex home and make sure she's okay. Like, hey, do you want me to come in? No, I'm fine. I'm just going to have a drink and take a shower and go to sleep. And Debbie says, okay, I'll check on you tomorrow. And Alex responds, well, thanks, both of you. I'm sorry about all this. And Mei just says, well, I hope you know that this beyond repays like everything that I owed you or that you were under the illusion that I owed you. And if I figure out a way to bill you, I will. And so Alex walks into her apartment thinking, man, I don't even know how I should feel. I beat a demon. Should I feel happy? Should I feel proud? Mostly I just feel tired. And waiting for the next shot to come from the darkness, like waiting for what, you know, been through so much in the last month or so, just waiting for the next shoe to drop. Like, now what's going to pop out of the woodwork? What new challenge? What new problem? It's like, man, it took so long to lose the feeling that at any moment, my next second was going to be the last second on earth with this entity that could, you know, be anybody who had that mark. And after the kidnapping and after the explosion, I guess I never really have felt safe, and maybe I never will. Cause even though wounds heal, the scars remain. And she walks into her apartment, turns on the light, and we see a voice off panel say, "Hey, Alex." And she turns and looks over on the couch, and there's Johnny sitting there. And obviously she's surprised, saying, "Johnny?" Cause as far as we know, as far as even his own mother knows, he's dead. And that's how the first volume comes to an end. So again, like I said at the beginning, this is a really great story. It's meaty, as you can see. You know, I've been talking about it for God knows how long now. You know, this is only 6 issues, and there's a lot to the story. This isn't like reading, you know, just your typical Marvel comic that takes 5 or 10 minutes and you're done. That, you know, it's mostly pinups and big splash pages and big panels. I mean, there's a lot to this story. And there's things that are missing. Like I was talking about a little bit in the narrative, where there's a few things, a few tweaks here or there that could be added in to kind of fill in some holes that would help with the pacing a little bit and help with the narrative, because it does jump a little bit a few times. But it's a nitpicky thing. I think it's Caitlin Kittredge and Roberta Ingranata, like, learning how to collaborate and learning how to get their stories and their ideas across. So I'm sure that gets better as the series goes on. I've only read up through issue 8 myself, but I'm planning on covering all of these in some upcoming Top Cow Thursdays. So we'll get through the whole series pretty quickly, because I'll probably cover them trade by trade by trade. So a couple more issues and we'll have covered the whole thing. And I'm really giving it like the highest level of what's going on in order to get the nuance of the story and kind of the spectral feel, because that's the best word, spectral, to kind of describe this story. You really need to read it for yourself. I love that the creators kept it in New York, just like when Sarah Pazzini was wielding the Witchblade, because it just feels like such an inherently New York story. And the artwork that Granada gives here makes it feel that way. It's gritty, it's dark, it's shadowy. There's a lot of snow, and you know, you can feel the cold, you can feel the shadows, you can feel the darkness, and it suits kind of the supernatural feel. You know, the first Witchblade when it came out was Michael Turner art, you know, one of my favorite artists of all time. But it's so clean, the art is so clean, it feels very super heroic and sort of inherently bright, even when the colors aren't always bright. And oftentimes they were in those early Witchblade issues. But here, with what Brian Valenza does, it's a lot more greens and blues and grays, and not bright tones, but a palette that is much more subdued. It's a little more sort of supernatural. And that's not to say this feels like a horror comic, which it easily could slide that direction, right? When you're talking about demons and the way the Witchblade manifests and exorcisms and darkness and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't slide that direction. It feels supernatural, but it's not like horror or scary. But it just has its own kind of unique tone and feel. And the other part of it is these are strong female characters. And this is really, you know, a female team that is taking on a weapon that bonds to females. So it's great that we're getting a female perspective to give these strong female characters a female voice. And it's very interesting. It's very compelling. They feel very real. They feel authentic. You know, there's not, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Sarah Pazzini as much as anybody. She's like this kick butt, take no prisoners, tough at, you know, New York cop. And I love that. But there's also this aspect to her that's a little larger than life, because she, you know, her flaws are very minute. Obviously with Alex, she's been through so much. She's been through so much trauma. She's still come out on the other side. She's still fighting for others, but she's flawed on such a deeper level that she feels so much more authentic. And it's clear how much her friends care about her with what they've gone through in this particular issue, that they stood by her. But how that reflects on Alex as a character, I mean, for her friends to stand by her, even Majel, who, you know, at least in the beginning, doesn't necessarily see her as a friend, not necessarily happy to see her. But how does that reflect on Alex as a character and as a person, that everybody's willing to stand by her, right? So there's a lot to like here. And like I said at the very beginning, I think it's a really underrated series and not enough people tried or not enough people talked about. I think that a lot of people just, you know, they wanted the old Witchblade. But I applaud Mark Silvestri and Matt Hawkins and everybody over there at Top Cow for greenlighting this idea, because it is so different. And you have to just read it and take it for what it is. You can't read it and think and compare it to everything that it's not. You know, well, it's not Sarah Pazzini. It's not the old Witchblade with the metal bikini that you're used to seeing. Like, read this and appreciate it for what it is. It doesn't invalidate any of the previous versions of Witchblade, any of the previous Witchblade stories. None of that. None of the Michael Turner stuff. None of the David Wall stuff, Christina Z stuff, the Ron Marz stuff. That stuff all still exists, and it's its own thing. You know, just a previous bearer of the Witchblade. And we know that we're getting the return of Sarah Pazzini, written by Marguerite Bennett. So before you go check out Marguerite Bennett's Witchblade, before that new version is released, that may be a lot closer to Sarah Pazzini, that version that people know and is beloved, it's probably closer to that than it is to this, but it doesn't invalidate this. And I wouldn't be surprised, knowing Marguerite and knowing her style of writing and the fact that she likes to write strong female protagonist, I would be shocked if she hadn't read this version of Witchblade and maybe draw some inspiration from this as well. So, and to me, and that would be, as a Witchblade fan, that might be the best of both worlds. And I'm saying that, again, not having read all of this volume two or this second version of Witchblade, but I will before the Marguerite Bennett stuff comes out. But really, as a Witchblade fan, I'd love to see Marguerite pull from some of this sort of authenticity that this version of Witchblade has, that Alex Underwood has, and marry it with some of a little bit more of the superhero aspect of what we have in the original Witchblade. As cool as this Witchblade armor is, it doesn't even really look like armor. That's probably the one thing that I don't say I don't like it, but like, I like it the least. If that makes sense. I still like it because it's something new and different, but it doesn't say Witchblade to me at all. So I do kind of wish that Alex, when she manifests fully the Witchblade, that her armor looked a little bit looked like armor instead of just like this color change of her body. But again, it's a minor nitpick. I actually love this story. I love what they're doing. I love the characters. I love the authenticity. I love the setting, the feel of New York as its own character. And I'm really looking forward to what Marguerite Bennett does. And that's why I wanted to start covering this version of Witchblade now before Marguerite's comes out. Because again, I'm very curious to know, is Marguerite pulling from this as well as, you know, the 175 or 185, I think it was, issues of the regular Witchblade series, plus all the mini series and crossovers and all that kind of stuff. Like, let's just marry all that that corner of the Artifact universe together, and I think that pulling some of the best parts of Sarah Pazzini's version and best parts of Alex Underwood Underwood's version of the Bear of the Witchblade, it could make for a very compelling comic for 2021. So again, I do recommend this. It's in trade. It's available digitally. You can go read the first issue at topcow.com. It's definitely worth your time, especially if you're a fan of Witchblade or just kind of supernatural action-y books or books that have strong female protagonists. I think you'd really dig this. So like I said, we'll be covering the other two volumes coming up here in the next few months before the new Witchblade hits stands. So hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, I want to thank everybody for supporting and hanging out. Be sure you check out our Kickstarter spotlight from this last week, where we talk with Liam Sharp about the Unseen Art of Jack Katz, who is a Golden Age artist who Liam befriended recently in over the last 10 years or so, and discovered just a treasure trove of art from this guy. And his comic career started like 8 decades ago, and he's been working as a creative for nearly all that time. I mean, he was a contemporary of Golden Age artists like Alex Raymond and Alex Toth, and the fact that he's still around and still creating at 93 years old is amazing. It's amazing, and his art is it's out of this world. Like, so be sure you listen to that interview with Liam. And even if you don't think it's for you, even if you don't want to pledge, be part of the campaign, or just can't afford it at this time, at least retweet, at least share it on social media. So everybody who wants to get Jack's book can get it. Anybody who may be discovering for the first time can go and look at the campaign and look at the beautiful line work on these pencils and go, man, that's great. This guy's been around since the Golden Age of comics, and we can celebrate his work by helping him out. He's on a fixed income. So anything we can give will, you know, go beyond producing the book and help Jack be able to keep creating even at 93 years old. And just, you know, if you're an aspiring comic creator, especially, really recommend that you go and check it out, because this guy's work, his line work is just unreal. So go check it out. Listen to Liam talk about it. Liam clearly loves this man and is very passionate about the project. It's already fully funded, so you know you're going to get the book if you do pledge. And there's some other rewards, some prints, and there's even talk of maybe a few, Jack doing a few head sketches. So definitely go check it out. And if you can, pledge, and if you can't, at least share it on social media. So again, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode. Really want to thank you all for your support and for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.